Right, we're going to do a short episode on BPH. So BPH, or benign prostatic hypertrophy, is an enlargement of the prostate from a proliferation of stromal cells, and it results in obstruction of the prostatic urethra. The men will present with lower urinary tract symptoms, including intermittency, reduced stream pressure, feeling of post-void residual urinary frequency. It's extremely common. About half of men over 60 will have signs or symptoms of it. And the other associated symptom is actually erectile dysfunction, and that mechanism is not totally clear. So, in terms of diagnosis, there is a scoring system called the International Prostate Symptom Score that you can use. And it's useful, especially for some of the medications that we'll discuss. You can do an infection, though it's not super high yield, because really, men that are presenting with lower urinary tract symptoms have BPH until proven otherwise. But you can feel for any nodularity, which would be concerning for a cancer, and tenderness, which would be concerning for prostatitis. In terms of your labs, you can consider a urinalysis at baseline, especially if there's prostate sensitivity. People will start, will collect a PSA when starting a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor, like Proscar, because there's some evidence of high-grade prostate cancer risk on those medications. And there is also some evidence that it can be a surrogate for treatment. So, otherwise, you shouldn't be routinely ordering a PSA, especially if they have life expectancy, and you know that's not much greater than 10 years. If you're worried about like a significant obstruction, or there's a history of recurrent UTIs, you don't need to do creatinine. Likewise, you don't routinely need to do an ultrasound or post-void residual. And certainly not a prostate biopsy routinely, unless otherwise indicated. So indications that are commonly seen in from prostatitis would be hematuria, like a nodular, tender prostate too. So those might indicate ultrasound and biopsy. And just remember your differential. So men do get, cystitis, though it's less common. Can be urethral stricture, especially in people that have been catheterized. Some folks, especially those who have been mobilized for a prolonged period of time, can develop bladder stones. And then there's various medications that can cause like bladder overactivity or retention, including any anticholinergic medications, tricyclics, especially, can cause retention. And other things that decrease sensitivity, like narcotics. So, in terms of managing it, again, use your IPPS score to make a decision. In terms of lifestyle modifications, avoiding nighttime fluids, avoiding irritating foods like alcohol, coffee, medication, stopping the medications that we spoke about, considering bladder retraining. There's lots of evidence in women for that, so there's some transferability. And avoiding constipation, that's an important one. Is that constipation is a not uncommon cause of urinary retention, especially in pediatric population. So in terms of pharmacotherapy, you start with an alpha blocker. Just remember that these can decrease blood pressure, and there can be positional symptoms for sure. It's a highly effective medication. Most men will respond, and it doesn't work right away. Usually, it will take some time, on the order of weeks. And remember, it doesn't affect the prostate size. It's a symptomatic treatment. And it actually doesn't seem to reduce hospitalizations related to retention, which is interesting. So just remember, you know, you might want to use your selective ones. If they do, sometimes you can get some additional blood pressure benefit, so you can use your non-selectives for them. Terazosin or terazosin is probably the most common non-selective that I see used, and it has a significant effect on blood pressure. And then your selectives, I just remember, this podcast is targeted toward exam taking, so we only need to know one medication in class. And that's Flomax, easy to remember, tamsulosin. So, in terms of your 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, I remember Proscar, which is also called finasteride. And it's only indicated in patients who technically have an enlarged prostate, which I think is interesting, but anyway, those are folks with a prostate that's more than 30 grams. Or an elevated, or I shouldn't say an elevated, a PSA that's greater than 1.5. And it's a very effective medication. It tends to shrink the prostate by about a quarter. And actually, as morbidity benefit and decreases episodes of urinary retention. But it can have some side effects, including decreased libido and very rarely gynecomastia. The one about the libido, though, I just read around it. Probably for the purposes of tests, you can quote it, but I think in like relatively, like people who aren't super struggling with erectile dysfunction, it's sort of a non-issue. But in people that have erectile dysfunction already, it can perhaps exacerbate things. So you need to take it for about 6 months, and you expect a PSA reduction of approximately 50% at the 6-month point. And if you don't see that, then you might become suspicious and proceed to ultrasound. And I think most often you're going to see both comboed. And just remember that you can stop the alpha blocker after 6 months and see if their symptoms are well controlled and potentially prevent falls and stuff like that. And then moving forward, there is some evidence for muscarinics and beta-3 agonists. But just, again, be careful if there's outlet obstruction, because you might make things sort of worse from that perspective. There is some evidence for Cialis as well, for BPH. And then for folks that are having a lot of nighttime issues, you can think about desmopressin. But just remember, you know, it's an antidiuretic hormone analog, so you can get hyponatremia. So you're going to want to again check the baseline sodium a week or so after starting, and then 1 month. So what else do we want to say? What's not, there's no good evidence for a bunch of complementary regimens, including so-called phytotherapy that you'll see people on, and they take kind of toxic things like stinging nettles, so advise them against that. And you know, I'm reinforced to some people that, you know, it's serious. I'm sure in your training so far, you've seen a lot of hospitalizations related to urosepsis and men with big prostates. So people, you know, not infrequently die from this or end up with a catheter for weeks on end after hospitalization. So in terms of surgeries, it's if they're medication resistant, because the medications are extremely good. So medications are first line. If they're having resistance to medication, or they're having like dramatic changes in their kidney function for whatever reason, they can't wait kind of 6 months. And just, you know, this is more of a urology issue, but they're going to be needing cystoscopy and ultrasound prior to surgery, obviously. And I won't go into much details here, but the TURP is the most common one you'll see, which is a transurethral resection of prostate. And it is usually a well-tolerated procedure, but it can cause problems. And not infrequently, urinary strictures or urethral strictures as a result of any of these types of procedures, which in and of themselves can be really bothersome for people. So, just consider different options. If they have a big honking prostate too, they may end up with a prostatectomy, which in and of itself is a whole slew of adverse effects, including erectile dysfunction. So just consider when your patients are on medical therapy when to refer to urology. And it's not to say that they're necessarily going to go for surgery. The urology does have some other suggestions for medical management potentially. Of course, if they have an abnormal DRE, you're going to do an ultrasound. If they shouldn't have much pain. If they have an increased PSA, especially on 5-alpha reductase inhibitor. And importantly, if they have recurrent UTIs or hematuria, those are both sufficient for referral. I feel like sometimes we take hematuria too lightly. Because, you know, microscopic hematuria is more often than not benign, or you have women that are menstruating. But in older folks, especially gross hematuria, is never normal. I should say at any age group, gross hematuria is never normal, but hematuria in older folks, you might get suspicious. I didn't think that was a recent discussion of BPH. This is a kind of breakdown. If they are primarily presenting with storage symptoms, so overactive bladder-like symptoms, consider the lifestyle changes that we discussed, and antimuscarinics and B3 agonists, and then remember ADH for nocturnal or nocturia. For people with voiding symptoms, remember alpha blockers working within weeks, 5-alpha reductase inhibitors working at 6 months, and when you start the reductase inhibitor, can have baseline PSA. Repeating that in 6 months, considering stopping your alpha blocker. And for folks with erectile dysfunction, you can trial Cialis with a 5-alpha reductase as well. Just be careful starting a Cialis and an alpha blocker at the same time. And then if all that fails, you think about surgery.